Sci-Fi.
Part-time fandom doing my thing.
So here we go. This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I'm with my pal Paul Edwards. And so did you see it today?
I saw it yesterday.
Oh, you saw it yesterday. All right. And it being
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. It has a lot of the's in the title, but
yes.
You know, I'm not going to hold that against it.
No, I don't think you could hold much against this movie at all, to tell you the honest truth. I mean, I don't know about you, but I freaking loved it. I was pretty blown away by it. I kind of came out a little bit gobsmacked, especially by the technology and stuff.
Yeah, I really thought it was interesting that, you know, some of the best acting, you know, that I've seen in a movie this summer came from people playing chimpanzees.
Well, not even that. It's so funny that you would jump right to that point, because I feel like, you know, sort of jumping on the thing that I kept thinking during this movie was, you know, I've seen, I would say there's probably like what, like of the summer, this is, or of the year, like as far as like action or sci-fi, this is like one of the top, if not like the top, right? Like it's up there. Probably in top three for me, I would say.
I haven't seen Snowpiercer yet, which I understand is very good.
But, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, this is this pretty much, you know, blows away a lot of other movies.
Yeah.
I really liked the last one, you know, the Rise of Planet of the Apes. But this one did a fantastic job of just taking everything that was in that movie and moving it forward in a way that, you know, felt logical. I mean, it really felt like a sequel, but upping the ante in every department.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, here's the thing, and what I was going to say before, I'm pretty astounded by the fact that I've seen two movies in which there are mostly digital creations where I was very much emotionally affected by things that were made digitally. That being How to Train Your Dragon Part 2 and this movie, you know, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And, you know, I saw a movie which, you know, I loathed, you know, which we talked about several weeks ago, Godzilla. And, you know, had live actors and just didn't do anything for me. No actor, no piece of acting, nothing. Just, you know, dead. And I just kept thinking while I was watching this movie and the apes, obviously there's actors underneath, but, you know, you could say what you want about Andy Serkis. I mean, Andy, what, that's his name, right? Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is, you know, there's a lot of credit that goes to the animators in this, like a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And for me to, you know, kind of just discount that there's this huge digital aspect and that we've reached this point where something, characters that are mostly Andy Serkis, yeah, the characters that are mostly created in a computer, you know, through technology. I mean, we're at the point where, you know, that the CGI is like that good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally get it, because I mean, you know, it's a new style of acting.
Yeah,
it's where the actor works in tandem with, you know, where before you had, you know, an actor and maybe a makeup team,
yeah,
you know, who worked to create this this character. Now you've got an actor and a essentially digital makeup team that work in tandem to, you know, create a performance, and then the digital people are actually enhancing the performance, and the actor is enhancing what they're able to do digitally. You know, I mean, it's this really cool balance of things, you know, that are going on right now. And what's cool about, I mean, Andy Serkis, he's the godfather of it, you know, he's the one who definitely started. But I mean, you look at any number of the other motion capture performances in this movie, and they're just as good, you know. The ape that plays, you know, his nemesis, you know, his friend, starts off as his friend and, you know, becomes his nemesis in a
Koba.
Koba, you know, in this great sort of pseudo Shakespearean kind of role. You know, he's fantastic. He's an incredible villain. Although one of the things that I, again, walk out of this, and I mean, just the amount of planning that went out, it went into every little part of this movie, is that really you can't like call anyone a villain in this movie, because it really forces you to see the point of view of each character, you know. On the ape side, on the human side, you see sort of the same dynamics playing out. Every ape has a human counterpart, and every, you know, human has an ape counterpart that's experiencing something. And, you know, even, you know, as horrible as Koba is, you see why he acts the way he does.
Well, yeah,
And
it's very much sort of like the Rick situation in The Walking Dead with his, what was his best friend, Shane, you know, where you're like, the guy is right, you know, like there's one, you know, and we're sort of getting a little bit ahead of ourselves in the plot, but whatever, you know, there's one moment where Koba actually, you know, signs or says to him, like, they're gonna get this thing up and running. You know, meaning the dam, which that's basically, you know, the subplot with the humans, or the main plot, I guess, which is, you know, there's a dam outside of San Francisco that the humans need to get to, and the colony of intelligent apes is kind of in the way of that dam, and between the humans getting to the dam, and basically, you know, they have to figure out how they're going to either get past the apes or work with them so they can get power restored in their community in San Francisco, because the world has gone to pot because there's been a plague that wiped out most of humanity.
Yeah, you've got a great opening that recaps the end, you know, what's happened since the end of the last movie. You know, essentially that the you know, what had begun as a cure for Alzheimer's has mutated, and it's turned into a disease that pretty much decimates the human
Yeah,
population.
the simian virus.
Right. It's blamed on the apes, but, you know, it's not really the apes' fault. However, you know, a side effect of this thing is that it has boosted the apes' intelligence. And you know, if you're looking at Scott Shaw's Facebook
Oh,
feed on there,
whatever.
no, that it actually has changed them physically, that they don't look quite the same as they did before. They're starting to look a little more human too. Especially you see that in that, you know, little flashback, not a flashback, that video flashback moment, you know, with Caesar as a baby. And you see, oh yeah, he is, you know, that, you know, they're not, they're more, you know, they're more than apes. They're, you know, they've become something quite different.
Well, I don't think they're that different. I mean, I don't even want to get into that argument because that's like nitpicking to the utmost degree. That and that's a bunch of bullshit, and that's like something that, like, well, I just eye rolled when I saw that. I was like, whatever, man, you know. I felt like there were a lot, you know, and you're talking about somebody who hasn't even seen the film, you know, admitted, said they hadn't even seen the film. But there's like, the thing that's amazing about this movie to me is like, there are sequences. I mean, talk about a great way to sort of, you know, once you get beyond that opening credit thing, you know, when you're dealing with a community of, you know, apes, chimps, or whatever you want to call them, and it felt like there were a lot of times they took a lot of time to have quiet moments between the apes, and they had this, you know, thing where they set up their method of communication, much like the first movie, which is they pretty much just sign everything. You know what I mean? They're advanced, but they're not that advanced. They're not like advanced like in the original movies. And there were sequences where I really felt like I was looking at something like a nature, you know, documentary. Like I was like, this is astounding to look at. Like, and the fact that the filmmaker, the director would take that breathing time to be like, okay, let's get to know everyone. This is the way their community works. This is, you know, and then they go on the hunt, which is very dramatic, or the quiet moments take place after that. I can't remember. Like I was all in. I mean, I don't think I was talking to somebody at work. I don't think there was one moment where I was kind of like watching that, where I was taken out by the look of the apes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't, you know, I don't think that, I don't think it's a problem that they don't look, you know, that they look a little more, you know, that they don't look exactly like, you know, a real ape. I don't think that they're meant to, you know, because I think we're meant to, you know, empathize with them also.
But
you
also, that's the thing is, if we're talking about they look like, I thought they looked a lot like a real ape. I mean, I didn't have photographs with me, like right next to me, but they were pretty damn close. You know what I'm saying?
One of the interesting things too is, you know, that the apes have this is when we begin the movie, it's 10 years after the outbreak of the the simian flu, and you know they haven't seen people in what they say basically 2 years, and you
that's
know, they're
right
they're wondering if, you know, maybe humanity's gone, and you know they're Caesar, you know, is, you know, he's broken up a little bit about that, but at the same time, it's like, you know, this is their world now. And they've developed their own sort of social structures and their own rituals and their own, you know, way of doing things. It was really, really cool to see sort of what they ended up, you know, making. And, you know, there are, they do take little bits of a human culture into, you know, into their own culture, you know, they build, they make, you know, they make things, they use tools, but it's a very primitive, you know, styled structure, which is really cool, because it's not like, you know, I mean, going back to the original, you know, Planet of the Apes movies, you know, which was very much sort of a, in a way, sort of a Stone Age, like the apes had sort of a Stone Age culture, but they also had, you know, guns and little bits of human technology, you know, that were sort of left over. But with this one, it's very much of a, you know, more of like a primitive, you know, sort of Bronze Age sort of culture that they've got going on.
Yeah, yeah.
What I thought is great is that immediately, you know, it does throw you in with the apes for a big chunk of the movie. You're with them. And then when you, you know, when the people sort of join in,
they kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah, they kind of come out of nowhere. It's like a little bit of a shock. It's just like, oh crap, you know, like there's people. And then you leave the apes for a while and follow the people, and you see sort of what's become of human culture at the time. And you know, again, like you said, the purpose of this is to get the power back on. It's really important for them to get the power back on. And what I really loved about this movie too, and it's not the reason why they need to get the power back on is, you know, not just for lights and for, you know, everything. It's so that they can access their memories, because everything that we have now is digital.
Well, yeah, that's sort of one of the big, I mean, this movie is like really layered. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, and that's not to say like intellectually layered, like it's hidden in there. This is a very entertaining movie, but like, this is like, there's like layer upon layer. And that's like one of the biggest comments like in the movie. And I was talking with my boss about it at work today, and he was saying like you know the comparison of like, yeah, everything is digital, we rely so much on gadgets and technology, like which society is really better, you know what I'm saying? It's sort of like when you would see, again, like those like National Geographic documentaries, and you go into the Amazon, and there's like tribes of, you know, Native Americans or whatever, Indians or whatever you want to call them, and it's like, which society is better, you know? It's like, because when you meet the chimps, the apes, you know, everything is peaceful. they're all fine with each other. There's no real conflict amongst each other. It's only when they come into contact with the humans that they start like questioning each other. And uh-huh. and you know, it's just really interesting. And then there's just so much of that sort of thing. Like I thought there was it wasn't an anti-gun commentary to me. It was just the fact that it was like as soon, you know, eventually, you know, the apes start kind of like, you know, because the humans, they go up to the chimp community and convince them, oh, can you let us get through to this dam so that we can get through? And basically, you know, you've got, what's his face? You've got Koba. And yes. Caesar is willing to let them come through, but only for a short time, you know, to get their work done. And Koba's like, no, as soon as you let them through, you know, they're going to get that power back on and they're going to be able to come and get us, which he's absolutely right about that.
Yes. But, and you've got on the other side, you've got your basically the human counterpart to Koba, who is Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman, exactly.
Who's very much of the, you know, he's like, okay, you know, I mean, he's got a full armory and he's ready to go, you know,
kill
full
some
war
apes.
against the apes. You know, unless...
But that's the thing, like with Gary Oldman, didn't you find, like what I thought about Gary Oldman's character is like, there was, like, who's going to believe a bunch of talking apes? Like that's the first thing that really astounded me is that when these new band of humans come across them, they've never heard of like talking apes. They didn't know about them. Like so from the end of the first movie to this movie, there's never been human to like talking ape community contact as far as we know, right?
No, there hasn't been because you know, the first movie ended with the escape of the apes from the from the facility. And then the simian flu hit right after that.
Exactly.
So you had this like really sort of interesting, amazing moment, but like it was immediately sort of it sort of fell apart in the news cycle because of this, because of the outbreak of the flu. And so, you know, maybe one or two people are alive that remember the ape escape, but you know, they probably haven't put it together, and they certainly never put it together, that these things now have human intelligence.
Yeah. And that was sort of, for me, what was playing with Gary Oldman. Like, I felt like his character was like, yeah, right, whatever. These are not really intelligent. You know, almost like in the original Planet of the Apes movies, which I watched this weekend, the Charlton Heston one, where they keep, like, no matter how much Charlton Heston talks, no matter what he writes, no matter what he says, they're like, oh, please, it's just mimicry. Oh, he's not really intelligent. It's not a real living creature. Like,
it's a trick, you know? It's a parlor trick, yeah. And Gary Oldman, I think, is very much in that same mindset. But it was really, really interesting, again, like how the dynamics of the thing plays out, because no one's wrong in this movie. You know what I mean? Everybody's got like a very valid point of view. You've got, you know, the scientists on the human side, you know, who are trying to, you know, work some sort of a peaceful coexistence. You've got Caesar, who wants a peaceful coexistence because, you know, he remembers good people. And then that's the other fascinating is that Koba just remembers the bad side of people because he was in the lab. That was his experience. That's what he knows.
Well, I think they pulled him from like a circus or something in the original movie. I think they might have said that, or I don't know, a zoo or something. But that was an amazing scene where him and Caesar are talking, and they're not even basically talking. They're kind of signing, and then Koba says like Caesar says something like, we'll let the humans do their work and then they can go.
Yeah,
and Koba's like, this human work. Like,
he points out every scar on his body.
Really powerful stuff. Like, I was just like, wow. Talk about like being able to deliver a powerful moment, but with little to no like actual full dialogue. You know what I'm saying? Like spoken dialogue.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a good chunk of this movie is subtitled, you know, which
yeah.
which is awesome. I mean, it's like, yeah, yeah, we're going to make a blockbuster and we're going to make you read while you do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Floss can do it, right? I mean,
absolutely. And, you know, it what's great about it too is that, you know, it doesn't skimp on the action. It's a very action oriented movie, but then when they have, like, you know, sort of the big epic battle, you know, when the apes do pick up the guns and, you know, they start the fight against the human, it's horrible because it means, like, that they just turned into us.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that I wanted to say about before is that it shows that once the apes get the machine gun, you know, Koba, you know, because the big thing is that Caesar is able to dominate the rest of his tribe because he's the strongest, or he's the smartest, or he can figure out how to win, you know, in combat or something. But once Koba gets a gun, you know, all bets are off. Like, it doesn't matter. It becomes not even an equalizer. He becomes the dominant, you know, sort of chimp, and the people like him. And it just, to me, it made a really big point about, like, why people would get addicted to the allure of weaponry like that, you know, why it's so easy to be like, this is mine and I deserve this because it lets me take what I want.
And
you know?
And there's that great bit of dialogue, you know, from Caesar to his son, you know, where he's just said, yeah, apes, you know, apes reach for the strongest branch.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like that again, they're so economical in this movie with the dialogue and getting, like, the point across in a really smart phrase that's done with, you know, little sign language and acting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you know, I still can't believe, like, how, like, vastly improved this is on the last one. And how it just opened the world up, like, so much. And I mean, even photographically, you know, there's just gorgeous long wide shots of, you know, the overgrown city and the forest.
The cinematography is beautiful.
I mean, and really beautiful stuff. A lot of the city stuff that's overgrown reminds me of the video game The Last of Us, which featured you know, a similar style with, like, especially with the digital lighting in on the vegetation and everything. You know, it's really beautiful to look at, and it's interesting too because we had gone back and watched some of the Charlton Heston, you know, the older movies too.
Yeah.
That there are little nods to, I mean, this is the second one in the new series of movies. There are nods to the second movie in the series, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, because you've got the tunnels under the city. You've got, you know, I mean, you don't have, you know, mutants who worship the bomb.
Yeah, no.
You know, but you do have, like, worship of weaponry in a way, you know. Some of the themes are the same as that second movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. And, you know, to talk about the first movie a little bit, the thing that impresses me so much about this, and actually impressed me about the Charlton Heston one, and, you know, the very first movie, which I watched the night before, you know, when I remember going to see the first one, like Rise of the Planet of the Apes in the theater, and just thinking, like, okay, like, this will be like a fun, kind of like dopey action movie. Hopefully it'll be better than that god-awful Tim Burton, you know, piece of garbage. And
which honestly couldn't be very hard to do.
Yeah,
anyway.
It wouldn't be very hard to do. But I just remember being blown away by the fact that they just went, like, it, like, the first chunk of the movie was just, like, all about, like, the development of it. And there was emotion in there, and there's dialogue and like caring and bonding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
well, amazing performance by John Lithgow.
Yeah.
In that first movie.
Yeah. Well, and what's his face?
James Franco.
James Franco is fantastic, you know? Yeah. And the thing is, like, it was not a type of movie that I expected, you know? And it's very emotional and very deep and has things to say about like a lot of things. And I did not expect that. I expected like some kind of cheesy action sci-fi thing. And that's the thing with this movie too. I mean, obviously there's a bigger budget. There's more going on, but there was just so much that I was just like, especially in the beginning, like, you know, when you see the apes like interacting with each other and they're signing and I'm like, oh, are we doing this? Like, we're doing this. We're going to do this. Like, this is like peaceful, quiet moments where there's going to be sign language and subtitles. And like, it comes across very intelligently.
Mm-hmm. It and doesn't we're going come to throw across... you and we're going to throw you into this world.
Yeah.
And we're not going to spoon feed you everything.
Exactly. But... and we're not going to insult your intelligence at all. Yeah.
But at the same time, it's also still true to sort of the B movie roots of the, you know, of what it is, you know. I mean, there's definitely, you know, like, especially among the human actors, you get some definite, you know, definite sort of B movie moments in the dialogue and stuff like that. But even the way that's delivered, it still makes it work. Like, Kirk Acevedo, man, like, I love that
character.
Oh, he's
a great actor.
I love that character because there's a moment, you know, where he's looking there, and so he's just like, wait a minute. And he's like, I'm the asshole. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So he commits. He's like, okay, you know, if that's who I am, that's who I am.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a great moment because it's just, you know, and it's so weird. I keep throwing back to Shakespeare on this because it's very Shakespearean. It's a tragedy. You've got, you know, it's all about, you know, power and the people who are, you know, trying to get power and the people who are, you know, trying to hold on to power and what it means to even have power, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lofty movie that's a lot of fun too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was the thing. It's like, and it's one of those films, sci-fi films, that you're watching And you feel like something more is happening here. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like you feel like again, Thursday night, the night before, Amy and I watched, you know, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. She had not seen it. And I was going to put it in. And she's like, oh, really? Come on. Like, kind of giving me a hard time. She's like, Planet of the Apes. Because she's thinking about the 60s, 70s versions. You
right,
know what
right.
I mean? And, you know, I was like, no, trust me, I'm telling you. So she pulls out her laptop and we're watching TV. Maybe about halfway through, she's like, this is not at all what I expected it to be. And I'm like, I know, that's what I kept trying to tell you. And she's like watching it and really likes it. And then, you know, I had already made plans to go see it with some friends from work mm-hmm. because, you know, she didn't want to go see it. So, and then we're getting ready to go to bed. And she's like, well, now I want to see the sequel. And I'm like, but I already made plans with my friend, you know, you know, and that's the thing is like, I told her I would go see it again. And if it was good, but that's the thing is like, it's the sort of thing that it's the sort of writing and planning. That's just like, this is the type of thing that I love. You've come across a group of people, the producers or whatever, the people at the studio, mm-hmm. there's obviously they want to make something better than just your average, you know, crazy. And that's the sort of feeling I get a bit out of, like, say, Marvel Studios or something like that, or, mm-hmm. or you know what I'm saying? Or,
yeah.
or you know, there's, or Pixar, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Like, that there's something there where it's like, we want to do something better than just making a fucking movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I think a lot of that has to do with Matt Reeves, who, like, is, you know, he's one of those guys who just gets better with every movie that he makes. You know, Cloverfield, you know, I know a lot of people didn't like Cloverfield. I really enjoyed it a lot because I thought that, you know, he was trying for something, you know, he was trying beyond even what, like, the script had given him and everything. He was trying for something, like, just a little different in making a monster movie. You know, the remake of Let the Right One In was fabulous. But this is just like whole other level. This is like, I mean, looking at this, this is like, wow, this guy, like, this guy gets it, you know? Like, he not only knows how to, like, you know, just to tell a story and make a movie, he understands the new way to make an effects movie and to, you know, to use digital effects to their full potential.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is that with, you know, even Rupert Wyatt, the director of the first one, I mean, there's some sort of guiding hand going on there. I mean, we can say what we want about the directors. They both did like a fantastic job. But I remember when I heard that Rupert Wyatt was going to not do the second one because his ideas were different than whatever, you know, whatever they wanted to do, you know, with Dawn. Mm-hmm. Like, I was very worried. And I think that's why I kind of went in pessimistically on this one, you know, where I was like, okay, I want to see it, but is this going to be as interesting to me as the first one was? You know what I'm saying? And yeah, I mean, they pulled it out. And I think it is the same. I'm not sure if it's the same writer or the same producers that are involved with the first and second one, but you know, whatever's going on there, you, like I said, you've definitely got people who are interested in crafting something, you know, and with the reverence to what came before, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the first, you know, in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, they made reference to, you know, the mission that Taylor had gone on.
Well, there's,
you know,
footage of Charlton Heston in it, you know?
So, you know, you've got, you know, it doesn't discount what came before it. It, you know, it keeps it there, but then makes, and, you know, in the best sort of sci-fi way, it makes that like a possibility, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, here's something new. And if you loved, you know, if you loved the old stuff, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to throw that away. You know, we're not going to get rid of that, which is, you know, such a usual reaction. It's like, you know, oh, you know, the thing that came before us sucked, you know, but we're going to make it better. We're going to improve it, you know. And with this one, it's like, no, you can go ahead and enjoy that. You know, that there's nothing wrong with that. We're just doing something different with it. And we hope you enjoy that, too.
Yeah. And we have a different toolbox to work with, and we're going to utilize that, but it's not going to get in the way of what we're trying to do. Like, in so many, you know, action sci-fi movies, it's like they're so dependent upon the technology, you know, Godzilla, that they forget all about like the human element. You know, they forget about what makes, you know, movies interesting: dialogue, you know, chemistry, you know, connections between people and events, you know.
Or between chimpanzees.
Or chimpanzees, yeah. You know,
again, it's like it treats non-human characters as characters, you know.
Yeah.
And like so many that would have been so easy to like sort of caricature, you know?
Yeah.
And they're not, you know, they're just as believable as, you know, as the people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's the real thing that very much blew me away about this movie was the fact that, you know, as much as, you know, okay, there's people there and they're talking and they're doing their thing and they've got their goals and stuff like that. I mean, you really, like, every time I was like, I want to see more of those apes, man. Like, I was so much more interested in their culture and what they were doing and what they were going to do. Because again, like, Koba is right. I mean, like how do you sort of justify this, you know? Because he's absolutely right that as soon as the humans are able to get power back into their community, they're going to have the upper hand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're going to take us out. They're going to get rid of us, you know? And, you know, there's almost a little bit of a, like, naive quality to Caesar to be like, no, we'll be okay, you know? And it's like, as you know, I mean, look, he can't even look at the fact that they kind of like destroyed themselves, you know, which I think they even make note of that, like, when they're talking about humans in the beginning of the movie, they say like, well, they destroyed themselves, you know what I mean? So that's the thing that I was very much like, wow, this is kind of crazy that he's trying to make peace, but he's trying to make peace with the species that basically did themselves in, you know, is so destructive, is so fucking bloodthirsty, you know, or rapacious that they basically did themselves in, but he still has a connection because of, you know,
James Franco.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he sees the good, and it's so sad. I mean, because, like, really, you know, it's, you have a bunch of characters, you know, who are optimistic, you know, they want to make it work, you know, and when things fall apart, you know, it's like horrible, you know, but at the same time, it's like, wow, you know, at least they made the effort, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really, again, it's one of those beautiful moments of, you know, humanity in there. It's like, you know, that it's not, you know, succeeding in a way is like, it's important, you know, but if you didn't succeed, at least did you take the effort to, you know, to work for peace, to take that moment, you know, when it was presented.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because it really does set, unlike some of the original movies, I mean, up until towards the end, it really does set the apes as the protagonist, you know, straight from the beginning, you know what I mean? And it sets them up as the people to be sympathetic toward, you know what I mean? I mean, when the humans do show up and they present their goals, you're sort of like, well, there's a part of me that was like, well, you had your chance, you know what I mean? like, you know, and then when Kirk Acevedo, you know, immediately just shoots an ape, you know, that's the thing that I didn't get, like, right away. I was like, does he know that they're intelligent? Or is he like, what the fuck is an ape doing out here? Like, yeah. And just shot it because he thought it was a monster or something. Like, yeah. I mean, thought it would, not a monster, but like an animal that would hurt him, you know?
Right. Well, you know, there's definitely, you know, they explore that a little bit. There is some anti-ape sentiment.
Oh, yeah,
because,
that's right.
You know, it's the simian flu, you know, like, it, you know, they think in their head, it's like, oh, it started because, you know, of these apes that escaped from this laboratory.
Yeah.
You know? But they didn't, you know, but they don't have any idea that they're intelligent, you know. He doesn't understand that, you know, and they don't know that until, you know, until that great moment. I mean, the first line of dialogue from the apes, you know, go. And, you know, when Caesar does it, you know, where he's like, oh, you know, that's big. But then when all of the apes start to shout at them, you know,
yeah,
like, it's like, wow, you know, like that's what they're moving toward, you know. And it's really interesting too, because again, you're beginning to see sort of the evolution of or de-evolution of communication among the apes, because they're starting to copy people more, you know, they're starting to speak more. It's funny, it's like, you know, the more that they move toward becoming like people, the worse they become.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, the better they become too, because, you know, you've got a big part of this movie is Blue Eyes, the Caesar's son, who, you know, is growing, you know, he's sort of an adolescent ape, you know, it's the transition from, you know, being, you know, just sort of a follower and somebody, you know,
not having
any sort of direction, to, you know, someone who could become, you know, his father's success. And, you know, he, in a lot of ways, exposure to people makes him a better character, you know?
Yeah. It's, I mean, the whole thing is just, it's just so astounding. It's funny because that you mentioned Blue Eyes, like when I was watching the original Planet of the Apes, you know, they call Charlton Heston Bright Eyes.
Yes.
And in the Rise of the Planet of the Apes, they call Caesar's mother Bright Eyes. That's her name. And I was like, whoa, talk about the callback. Like, I was just like, that's amazing. Like it's just so much thought just went into every aspect of this. Like, and that's the thing that sort of like makes your heart warm, when there's a thing that, like, obviously you and I grew up with these movies, you know, they were on TV all the time back in New Jersey, you know,
all
the effing time. And, you know, so much so that you kind of got sick of them after a while, you know, they were
funny,
just on. And the
funny
TV
story
show
for me about the Planet of the Apes. When I was growing up, I had a black and white television, and I watched all of the, you know, I watched all of these movies on my black and white TV.
Yeah.
I was shocked when I was older and I discovered that, like, that they were made in color.
That's hysterical. That's really funny. Oh, man. Yeah, but I'm just talking about just to bring up that first original movie, I mean, that's another thing where I started watching it and I was like, you know, we have a good friend, Steve, who's like, that movie's not good. It doesn't hold up or whatever. It's not a good movie. And it's just like, dude, I got to disagree. I mean, look, there's stuff in there that's hokey, and there's bits where Charlton Heston is kind of like doing a little bit of the male kind of like shithead swagger, yeah, you know, sort of thing that he kind of like devolved into towards the end of his career. But, you know, the thing is there's a lot of smart stuff in there, man. There's a lot of like subtext about technology and so, especially with what we're going through today, like science versus religious dogma, and can the two coexist? Like, I was like, whoa.
Well, you've got the great Rod Serling written screenplay there.
Well, that's interesting because he co-wrote it.
Yes.
And they rewrote the hell out of that. Like, originally, according to Wikipedia, and we all know what is on Wikipedia is true.
That's
originally,
right.
It was supposed to be like a futuristic setting. Like, the apes were supposed to be living in, like, you know, really, like, I guess, sort of Star Trek-like digs, you know? So they rewrote a lot of. So I don't know what exactly survived of, like, Rod Serling's original ideas. You know, even the ending. And that's the thing that surprised me too, is that they give you like tons of clues throughout the whole movie as to like what ends up happening in the end, you know?
Yeah. Well, but that's, that's it was a less sophisticated audience at the time. You know what I mean?
I guess. Yeah.
This kind of twist, you know, certainly hadn't been, you know, done many times before. I mean, it had been done, I think, a lot in like science fiction novels,
and
books and things like that. But you hadn't seen stuff like that on the movie screen. And so, you know, like when it hits, you know, it's one of, you know, it's sort of like, you know, Sixth Sense did at the time, where it's like, oh, you know, it made you rethink all of the stuff that you had seen, you know, prior to that, and be like, oh, that's it, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. And no, you're absolutely right about that. I don't think people were going into movies trying to second guess them, you know, at every minute, you know, with the Planet of the Apes. But that's the thing, is like, all I'm saying is there's a lot of dialogue in it. There's a lot of like apes talking to man. There's a lot of people talking about philosophies, and you know, there's a huge chunk of the movie where Charlton Heston just doesn't talk, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, and he's so good. It's interesting, it almost it's to his benefit, because when he does talk again, he has that sort of like chip on his shoulder, like, I'm Charlton Heston and you, who are you, you know what I mean? But when he's not able to speak, the way that he emotes and what you get out of his eyes is really, really pretty powerful stuff as far as acting goes, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, he's doing a really good job of communicating the situation that he's in and what he's trying to do. I mean, I was really impressed with that first movie.
Yeah. It is a really good movie. You know, what the unfortunate thing about the first series of Planet of the Apes movies is that, you know, in their rush to make sequels and capitalize on it, that they, you know, would slash the budget each time.
Yeah.
You know, like every time they made a new one, you know, they slashed the budget until like they got to the end, you know, and the last movie is, you know, a bunch of people dressed in ape suits who were like out in a meadow, you know, somewhere out in Yosemite Valley, you know, and unfortunately that last movie is just not very good in that series. The first one's great. The second one's odd, you know, but it continues that sci-fi.
Yeah.
The first one, the third one is, you know, 70s rific, you know, because they do the time travel bit in that one, you know, where Roddy McDowall and his wife come back to Earth, you know.
That's right.
And it's definitely like 70, but it's still a really good movie. It's a it's very entertaining, and you know, it's interesting, like it's satirical in a way of sort of celebrity culture and everything. And then then the one after it is like really dark.
And
it's like And
with a like, horrifying, like a really creepy ending.
Really
too.
Creepy ending. And a lot of the movie, like when I was watching, I was just like, holy crap, this is like Fight Club. I mean, you know, like where he, like the apes are starting to rebel against the people. There's like a very like dark vibe against it. And then unfortunately, like they just ran out of steam for the last movie.
Yeah. And they also did a TV show, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
but which was not very good.
But it's nice to see with this one, it's like, okay, you know, each time we're going to make it, we're going to invest a little bit more in, you know, in what we've built before, rather than being like, okay, what can we, you know, take out of that? You know, how much money can we take out of this without putting any back in? You know, there, it seems more of like an investment that like, I really feel like they want to grow this new series in a way that's respectful and, you know, takes care of the franchise long term.
Yeah, well, but that's the thing, right? I mean, the original Planet of the Apes, I mean, those movies were successful, but they were never really that highly regarded, especially, I mean, basically Heston was pretty much slumming, right? I mean, you know, they were not considered like now we consider them really great, like in the vein of like the original Star Trek, because there were so many concepts and great ideas and you know, some really, you know, neat moments in those movies that we all hang on to because, you know, I guess our generation, you know, the kids were smart enough or whatever, open enough, I should say, to like recognize things that these movies were saying to us, you know what I mean? Whereas adults at the time were like, that's just garbage. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not being able to look at the subtext or what's going on underneath. And that's the thing is like, I love that tradition is sort of continuing with these movies. Like they're just saying things about, you know, medical experimentation, medical research, you know, the first movie, Alzheimer's, taking care of your parents, you know, what happens, you know, when things start getting too difficult, how desperate will you become? And then this one is just like so many, just like really great, like messages. And when I say messages, I don't want to make people think like this is a movie that's lecturing you, because it's not in any way. But if you look hard enough or you keep your eyes open, there's just so many things it has to say about just everything in our, so many things about our culture, you know, like, again, like how tied we are into technology, why does war and weaponry make us feel, you know, better? Like, why is that so addictive? And, you know, and then just even the quest to get energy for the humans. Like, why is that so, has that become so incredibly important to us to survive? I mean, the answer is kind of obvious, but again, you're sort of leading yourself into another war situation in this movie, you know, or a situation of conflict, because you're so desperate for that energy and you're facing an enemy again that doesn't need that stuff, you know, which could very well be like, you know, Al-Qaeda, you know what I mean? Or something like that, you know? It's just, there's a lot of stuff going on in this movie if you think about it. But then that's the thing, is you don't have to think about it. You can go in and just be entertained.
Just be entertained by it just as well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. Like, gosh, like, look at the stuff that we've, I don't know, that's come out of, like, just a bunch of 60s movies that nobody ever thought would come, you know, nothing would ever come of them.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a joy to see somebody take, you know, take something and improve on it, you know?
Yeah.
And do it because they enjoyed the originals rather than, you know, just sort of blindly ripping off. Like, you know, everybody, you know, people talk about like, oh, another reboot, another blah, 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 you know? And, you know, to an extent, they're right. You know, it's like, oh, my God, like, you know, it's like, oh, there are no, like, really, you can't come up with any original ideas, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, like, if you take the approach that they have with this series and, you know, use it to comment, you know, on humanity and, like, to actually think about things and, you know, and, I mean, I have no trouble with someone rebooting a series if they took the approach that this one does.
I mean it really does all depend. I mean, I think there was an article in the Onion AV Club, which is like, which was making the point of like, Hollywood is just, you know, redoing everything. And like they were saying that the Planet of the Apes was kind of like symptomatic of that. Like, why don't you give us anything new? This is just crap, you know? Why can't you recognize it as such? And I'm like, and there's a part of me that does agree with that, where it's like, let's come up with something new. But the thing that we have to realize, like, when was the last one made? Like, what, 70 something? Mm-hmm. That's like, what, 20, 30 years ago? Like, the times evolve and they change. And if you're going to reboot something just to make a crappy action movie, well, screw you. But if you're going to reboot something to talk about the times that we're living in and take an idea and maybe remold it and reshape it into making something thoughtful yet entertaining, then again, just like you, I don't know how much of a problem I have with that.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm glad that they did it, you know, not just the idea of like remaking it with, you know, better special effects, because that's what the Tim Burton one was, you know?
Yeah,
The Tim Burton one was just taking like, you know, like the idea of a Planet of the Apes and, you know, like to me that if, you know, when I hear like a reboot or something like that, that's usually the way people go with it, you know?
Yeah.
And with this one, it's like, no, you know, we're going to redo it, but we're going to, you know, we're going to use the core ideas of that movie to explore new ideas and, you know, to see what it says about us, because that's the one thing that, you know, the best part of the first Planet of the Apes series is that, it's never really about apes. It's about us. It's always about, you know, us.
Yeah.
And what does it say about us? And, you know, and that's what it does. You know, this one's definitely continuing in the spirit of the Planet of the Apes and sort of in the spirit of Rod Serling and that Twilight Zone, you know, like this, this is the closest thing we have, I think, to sort of that Rod Serling style, you know, because everybody with Serling, you know, what people get bogged down, they always get bogged down on the twist. They think that Serling's all about the twist, you know? But you know, there were a lot of writers for Twilight Zone, and it wasn't ever, you know, in their heads, it wasn't about the twist. It was always about, you know, characters. Exploring what it means to be a person.
The human condition, yeah.
And, you know, this is definitely in that same vein, which is, I can't think of, you know, I mean, the two movies I've loved this summer more than anything else have been this and Cold in July. Which is the, you know, sort of a noir movie, you know, again, because like they're exploring the same thing, you know, what does it mean to be a person in, you know, this kind of a situation and things like that, you know, it's two definite, you know, opposite ends of the budgetary scale, you know, but with a similar sort of heart.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I agree with you, obviously, 100%. I mean, there's just so much in there. What I find interesting, too, is that it seems that they were very smart because they sort of kind of flipped the chronology with these, whereas the original Planet of the Apes series started like way in the future and ended up in the past, sort of, you know. This one starts in the past or starts at the beginning. And it looks like, I don't know what the plan is for the next couple of movies, but it looks like they're going to take us like further down sort of like the tunnel, you know what I mean? Of like into the future, how the society develops, maybe do things become much more desperate for the humans, which it looks like it might, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or like where exactly are we going with this? I mean, that's the exciting thing for me, is that someone at the beginning of this whole project was smart enough when they made Rise of the Planet of the Apes to go, why don't we just flip that and just start at the beginning? You know what I mean? You know, because there's, which one is it? The fourth movie where you end with the little chimp saying like, mama.
That was the third one. Yeah.
Yeah. The third one. Okay. Yeah. Where it's like, you know, they sort of went back in time and showed us how the whole thing kind of got started, you know? But yeah, I mean, this thing, I gotta say, like, they're onto something, you know? I mean, I don't know how much money it made this past weekend. I didn't even look. But,
74, 75 million.
Wow, that's kind of like what I predicted. Holy cow.
That's crazy. I think it nearly doubled the last one's opening
weekend.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, I know that I want to see it again as soon as I get the chance, and I know I'm going to take Amy possibly next weekend or this coming weekend because I just think it's I mean, I was sitting there looking at it and going like you know how like you I mean you would go see like CGI movies or something like and you'll be like that doesn't look quite right. I didn't I mean obviously you're dealing with a talking chimp or whatever monkey, so you're automatically disconnecting from that because you're like that's not real, like you know what I mean. But visually speaking, there was not one point where I was just like, holy cow, you
Well,
know what I mean? Like that looks fake.
one of the things that they did so beautifully is that there is a, there is a level of unreality to it. I mean, like when you're watching, especially in the opening with the hunt, and you're watching
Yeah.
the apes face off against the bear and everything like that, it's sort of like a Brothers Hildebrand kind of style, where it's like
Yeah,
very,
interesting.
very stylized lighting, and you've got like the thing, it's like it's not really trying to be photorealistic, it's trying to look gorgeous,
Yeah, yeah.
and that's what's so good about it. It's just like, and that's where CGI works the best, I think, is when there's at some point you have to stop trying to make it look real and just make it look pretty,
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
and that's what they nailed with this.
Yeah, they told, but that doesn't mean it doesn't look real because there was so much stuff that I was just like, I mean, how much of the environments do you think are fake? Like, there's so much. I mean, I was joking around with people at work and I was like, I think this movie might as well be Frozen, you know, for all I know. You know what I mean? It's just like so much of the environment, so much of the characters and creatures are not there. They're not real. You know what I mean? And it's just like we've gotten to the point of where computer technology, you know, has again, like with How to Train Your Dragon 2 and this has we've gotten to the point and you know, obviously several Pixar movies, but we've gotten to the point where like computer animation, you know, is getting to the point where it can seamlessly trick you into connecting to a character that is not at all real. You know what I'm saying? And that is amazing to me. Like, that was the most astounding thing about it. That's all I could think about. I mean, obviously, we've had animation for a long time, and there's been like, you know, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves and Bambi, but I don't think you connected to those characters, you would feel for them, but I don't think you ever looked at something like in a hand-drawn animated movie where you were like, I'm bonding with that on a level that you sort of might bond with some of the apes in this movie. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
I totally make sense.
I mean, that was sort of like another level where one of my friends who I went to see the movie with, you know, it's like I kept saying like, how long are we before it becomes just you don't even need real people? You know what I mean? Where it's just like, I mean, or you have like, say, Andy Serkis or an actor, and you don't even need their visual appearance anymore. You can just make them look like Brad Pitt, and then that's the movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's crazy. And then my friend made a joke that it was like that. Basically, yeah, that's kind of what this movie's making another point about, which like the apes are like phasing out the humans. The technology that's making out this movie might ultimately phase out humans. You know what I mean? Like in
Yeah,
movies.
except I mean, I don't know. I really feel like, again, there's something about the motion capture that's integral to, you need a person performing in there,
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that, but again, what I guess my point is that I feel like you could just take a person and make them into completely something else. Like you don't need, like you won't need like a Brad Pitt, or you won't need an Angelina Jolie. You could get somebody that looks like me and make them look like Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt, you know, like the perfect human being or whatever, and then just make them walk through the motions. You know what I mean? And then at some point, if computer technology gets smart enough, you know, artificial intelligence or something, you might even just be able to program a computer to just do the whole thing. which maybe. Is insanity. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah, yeah. That would be pretty crazy.
That would be crazy. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's some weird commentary that I don't think they meant to put in there. But I was like, this is, you guys are getting close, man.
Yeah.
You know?
And you know what? How cool is it, again, it's sort of a fanboy thing. How cool is it, too, that they slipped in Charles Burns' Black Hole?
I know, which I've never read. I still need to read it.
You should read it. It's about.
Dying to.
It's got a. It's got sort of a plague storyline in it too. And you know, it's really. It's a great little sort of geek nod.
Yeah.
That it's. I just adored that, you know, the fact that like a human and an ape bond over a comic book is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I've flipped through Black Hole several times and I always come so close to picking it up. And I just, for some reason, I just haven't picked it up, but I know that like when I was watching the movie, I was like, are you sure that's the thing you want to be showing? 'Cause I didn't know, you know, I don't know if the material is appropriate to just share with a complete stranger, even an ape, you know? So I don't know, but yeah, I mean, I just have to say the movie was fantastic. I think the characterization is all there. I think, you know, I mean, it was the full buffet for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I came out like fucking satisfied. I was just like so full to the brim and really kind of dumbfounded in a way. I mean, I came out of that movie, which doesn't happen a lot, and I just kind of didn't really know what to say other than that it was terrific. Like, talk about, I mean, I just think it's a great work.
Yeah.
And I just hope it does well enough for another one.
It's definitely the first movie that I've walked out of this summer and been immediately like, hey, I want to see that again right now.
Yeah. I would agree with you on that. I mean, I saw The Winter Soldier twice. I really like that. But obviously, there's also the connection of, you know, really loving the comic books and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know. Man, this is definitely in the top three so far of what I've seen. I mean, I don't get out to the movies as much as a lot of people do. But, you know, I would say like maybe The Raid, this, you know, and possibly like The Raid 2, I mean,
yeah.
This. And, I don't know, like
Winter Soldier yeah.
maybe. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because the more movies that keep coming out, Winter Soldier gets knocked down the list just a little bit more, which is nothing bad about Winter Soldier. I think it was a fantastic, probably one of the best Marvel movies that they've done.
Yeah.
But when I saw Winter Soldier, I was like, that's it, done for the year. Well, you know what I mean? And I'm just so happy to report that there have been like two or three other movies that I've just been like are just as good,
yeah,
if not better.
I think that this is probably the best summer for movies in a long time.
Yeah, we're getting there. I mean, I guess technically you would say that Winter Soldier, it wasn't a summer movie, right? I mean, I don't know.
I'm calling it a summer movie.
Yeah, I know.
But
I get what you mean.
You know,
I think it's the best sci-fi summer, like, in a long time, right?
Yeah, that's for sure.
Action, sci-fi, possibly. I mean, I haven't seen Snowpiercer. I want to see that. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to see it. I haven't seen, well, I don't want to see the Transformers. But, you know, I don't know, to each his own.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I'm not going to see that either. But, you know, I am really excited for Guardians of the Galaxy coming right up soon.
I don't know. I'm nervous about that one, Paul. That could swing either way with me. That's the thing is I have no nostalgic ties to any of the characters except for Rocket Raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
And that little bit at the end of the last Thor movie kind of scared me.
I'm looking forward to it because I'm a big I really like Slither. I really like Super. I think this, you know,
I
think
this like
director's
Slither,
got this director's got a really good touch, and I think it's going to hit a lot of good nostalgic slash little kid in me sort of sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that I'm looking forward to is seeing something that isn't something original, like sort of like space swashbuckling that isn't Star Trek or Star Wars for the first time. You know what I mean? And actually looks like it's going to embrace the campy sort of cheesiness of the whole genre. You know, it's not going to take itself too seriously.
Yeah, space like, opera. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, that's the sort of thing that that I'm looking forward to. I just my big worry is that you know, that Marvel is expecting every movie to make like $1 billion now, you know what I'm saying? Or be like a giant hit. And I don't know if Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be able to do that. I mean, my big fear for Guardians is that, remember that year that Scott Pilgrim like hit Comic-Con?
Yeah.
And like it was like, Scott Pilgrim's going to be amazing. And Scott Pilgrim was amazing, but it didn't do that well at the box office. Or it didn't do as well as expected based on the hype,
right,
like at Comic-Con, like what people were thinking. And that's just my big fear for Guardians of the Galaxy, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were actually walking down the street the other day, me and my wife, Amy, and there was a billboard, and I was like, that's the next one we got to go see. And she was like, that looks cheesy, Christian. And I was just like, oh, no. But then I had to be like, just trust me, it's going to be good, because I don't know. At this point, I have a lot of faith in Marvel. So.
I do, too.
And now I have faith in the people that make the Planet of the Apes movie.
Look at that. Things are getting more optimistic all the time.
Things are getting more optimistic. So any other last thoughts on Planet of the Apes before we sign off?
No, other than the fact that, like, yeah, I really want to see another one. They set up, they've already...
Oh, yeah.
At the end of it, they set up sort of an epic conflict coming up. So
can you imagine, like, a giant human ape like war epic? That would be crazy.
I think that'll be the next movie.
Oh my god, wow. All right, well, this has been the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes podcast episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Thanks for listening. I'm Christian Horn, and that is my friend Paul Edwards, and hopefully we will have another podcast for you in the next week or so. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing. I'm doing part-time. Part-timefanboy.com.